Hey everyone, and welcome to Rare Liquid. Today is a guest that you may be familiar with if you have been watching my previous videos, but this is Cherie. I'll let her introduce herself.
Hi everyone, my name is Cherie. I graduated from Stanford's Graduate School of Business back in June, so Ben and I are the same year at business school. Most recently, I am working on my own entrepreneurship journey. So I have my own podcast with my sister on YouTube and Spotify. It's called Tiger Sisters. We are the internet's career mentors and big sisters. And this week we launched Sisters Matcha, our matcha brand.
Cheers.
Cheers. Matcha cheers. And you can check us out on Instagram at sisters.matcha. And previously, I had experience working in tech and venture capital.
Yep. I'll leave links to everything Cherie is working on in this video's description. And today we're going to be talking about drama at business school and the MBA experience. So get ready for a spicy video. Quick disclaimer before we go into it though. First, we wanted to give you guys real information and insights into what the MBA experience is really like. So some of what we talk about is going to, you know, kind of shed somewhat of not the most positive light on the MBA experience, but I personally and Cherie and I have talked about it. We both had extremely positive experiences during our MBA experience, during our MBA. So keep that in mind as we go throughout this video. Do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, we both loved our time going to business school, but it's important for us to give you guys the real and let you guys know some of, you know, both the pros and cons.
All right, so with that said, let's just jump straight into it. And so the first question is, what kind of things have you seen where people have been really dramatic about recruiting, you know, career-wise, and how has it kind of led to some kind of drama? And I'm going to start with this one first. So it's not a super dramatic story, but I think it's also kind of a little bit funny and also distasteful. But first of all, I wasn't there because I never actually needed to recruit. I was working on Rare Liquid, but I had a lot of friends who are recruiting for banking. Mm-hmm. And you also know that bankers are like, the industry typically just attracts people who are a little bit more intense anyway.
Yeah.
So basically what happened was there was an info session and then one of my friends was just taking a bunch of notes down. I think he was near the front because like he doesn't have really good eyes. And so he was taking down a bunch of notes. I guess this other girl had seen him take the notes. And then so she went up to him and was like, hey, like, can you send me those notes that you wrote down for this info session? And he was like, oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Do you want, I was going to like just send it out to the group anyway. And she was like, no, just send it only to me. And then, so that's not like crazy drama, but then I heard that and I was like, what the heck? Like, I think also because in the MBA experience, when you're recruiting, a lot of my friends were like helping each other and you're kind of trying to all, you know, compete with each other, but also like, a rising tide lifts all boats,
yes.
Right? So if you try to do anything yourself, then you're going to most likely end up at a lesser place because doing like mock interviews with your friends, like all of that is really how you like get better and better.
Yeah.
So that's my really quick story about people being intense during recruiting.
Yeah. I think there's also another saying, it's like alone you go fast, but together you go far. And generally, I think most experiences is that like people are really willing to help one another, especially once you get close to someone and you really like them and you find, you know, your people at business school, like they want to help you with your job, especially if you're like pivoting into an industry that someone previously worked in, they can definitely help you there. But like when you guys are gunning for the same role, I haven't experienced this myself because we're in the same boat where we, you know, pursued our creator entrepreneurial path afterwards. but I think people, if you're like super competitive, it's not very outward at Stanford. I think people are generally very competitive by nature because you're going through this program. But then something they'll do with their behavior and how they show that is that like they, you know, hold their cards really close to their chest. So if they're interviewing for a place, like they might not tell you that they are, or like, you know, they're not offering up information to like be super transparent to help you out because they want to keep that information to themselves, which is fine. Like, you know, that's like one way to go about it. But then, you know, I've been in like other friend groups or environments where then like everyone shares everything. And then people can, you know, have more information to then negotiate or more information to then like, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Right. And I've also seen, as you know, on this topic, my friends and my MBA classmates who really helped other people, they just had such great reputations and people really like respect them for it, or just really, you know, received the help and were so grateful.
Yes.
And when you help people when you're when they're recruiting, especially for business school, this is pretty much the most important thing from business school, right? You want to get a good job out of school in order to pay off your loans if you need to, or just set yourself up for the future. And so if an MBA classmate helps you get the job of your dreams, then you don't owe them really anything. But at least, like, I remember in college, one of my friends really helped me, and I always remember how much he helped me in addition to my other friends. And so I just think that if you are watching this and you're going into an MBA program, for example, then you should really go into the mentality of trying to help your friends and classmates versus trying to one up everyone and get ahead just by yourself.
Yes, you want to be the person and also be known to as the person that people go to for help, and that is very generous and open with their help. Because on the reverse side, like you said, there are some gunners at business school because a lot of them grew up in that professional environment, especially in banking and finance and, you know, generally all fields. But like, it's not a good reputation to have if like you're the person who like doesn't help other people.
Right, right, right.
It doesn't look good at all.
Yeah. All right. Next question is, in the classroom setting, has there been any kind of dramatic interaction between classmates, maybe also including yourself, where people were getting like angry or, you know, going back and forth and almost even like yelling at each other? Like, do you have any stories like that?
Yes, this is not common, but I've had an experience with one class, and I spoke about this in our previous conversation. The class is called I'm Just a Bill, and it focuses on US policy, but more than that, it's a negotiation class. Mm. And it's a 10-week simulation, and everyone gets a role. They get very invested in their role and their negotiation. Everyone's grades depend on it. And as a result, things get really heated if you are, you know, the senator from this state, or you're a congresswoman or a man from a different state, and you have like differing objectives. Who is going to win out when you guys are negotiating with one another? And so people cried in that class.
That's crazy.
I cried in that class.
Wow. Yes. What made you cry?
What made me cry? I honestly don't even remember now what made
me
cry.
Just overwhelmed. Oh. Trying to pass this bill.
You're joking, but that is literally what it was. I remember why I cried. I was talking to a classmate of mine, and things got really heated between us, and we didn't raise our voice, but you know, it was very much like we were talking about like, oh, like it was a character assessment, you know? Mm. Like, I thought she was doing something not great, and then she thought I was doing something not great. Mm. You know,
and this is in front of all your classmates?
No, so this was a private conversation we had like in the back of the classroom, because the way that this class works is that after the first few classes, there's like no structure to the class. There's no lecture. Everyone just goes about in the hour and a half to go talk to other people.
Oh, interesting. I see.
And you use that hour and a half, and you can take that time. You know, you grab a friend or a classmate and you go sit outside to go talk through something. Wow. That's what the class is used for. Okay. And in this class as well, there have been people, both men and women, who've raised their voices, like straight up yelled at one another. And things got so heated that like people have to apologize after the fact. And some people are like, because I've seen this person act in this way outside of this classroom, I would never want to work with them. Mm. So it does affect professional reputation in some sense. And if you talk to any GSBer, you know, in this past class of 2024, you will know I'm Just a Bill is like such a crazy class.
Wow, that's actually so interesting.
Well, actually, you have to fill out a form when you get your role in the beginning, and you have to say if you're taking the class with a roommate of yours or someone that you live with, because then they, you know, have to make sure that the role that you get is not too in conflict with someone you live with.
Yeah, they really think this through.
Yes.
That's crazy.
It's insane. I'm getting chills kind of thinking about it, but getting back to the class.
Wow. I mean, I think that's really, and cool is a weird word to mention it, but to create a class where people care so much about what you guys are working on so that it leads to those kinds of emotions, I think that's like a, I don't know, that's just like cool, because from my experience at Wharton, I don't think we had classes that were like that, where I saw people get so riled up. Mm-hmm. I mentioned this in the previous, one of our previous videos, but some people do have these very, very like bad one-off comments. Like the one I referred to was like, in this particular context, this international guy was saying that he believed that men should earn more than women, but I wasn't there, so I don't really know why he said that. But he, I think, just one of my other friends knows him and it's like, oh, he's not a bad guy. He's just like very, very international, but whatever. So that kind of stuff does spread around a lot too. And that really did affect the reputation. Like, even though, you know, I had this caveat, a lot of people don't know the full story. And so they just heard this about that guy and they're like, oh, this guy sucks.
I mean, I'm hearing this and I'm like, this guy sucks.
Yeah, exactly. But going back to the I'm Just a Bill class, because I want to learn more about this. Is there anything else we should know about that class? Because it sounds like so much happened within that one like quarter or semester.
10 weeks.
Yeah. So is there anything else we should know about that class?
Yeah. So in the beginning of this course, we elect what we call a simulation president. So we need to have one of our classmates be president, and they have their own role with their own different responsibilities, as I would as like a congressperson from Texas. And then you can see how like the interpersonal dynamics get kind of, you know, heated here, because as president, this person then needs to appoint their cabinet and that's other classmates. And so should you appoint your friend who's in the class who like wants the climate advisor role, or do you appoint someone else who you think might be a more strategic, who will help you pass because, you know, this person's like, you know, way more connected in the class and like knows their climate policy and can really help you. So it's really like, you know, a mix of both classroom and also friendships and also professional stuff. And the professor, Professor Keith Hennessy, does such a good job structuring the class so that we're learning about U.S. policy, which is, I think, pretty special in business school. Like, it's not like the class you think about when you think about traditional business school classes. So you learn about U.S. policy, and then you also learn about, like, I don't know, negotiation a really special way where you can act it out and test different things.
So what's a negotiation tactic or skill that you feel like you gained from this class?
I don't know if it's gained, but it just highlighted how important back channeling is. It's like...
What is back channeling?
Yeah, it's, for example, if you're in a meeting with a bunch of people, I like to talk about it as like there's a perception of like what's going on here, and everyone can see this is observed behavior of like, oh, person A is speaking to person B, person C is not, you know, agreeing with this. Like, everyone can see what's going on up here. Back channeling is what happens here, what happens before the meeting, during the meeting, and outside the meeting, so that you can create some sort of appearance that happens here. And this is, I think, maybe political is like a very negative connotation, but I do feel like if you're trying to convince person A of something in a larger forum, should you speak about this with person A ahead of time so that you guys can coordinate and see if you're on the same page?
I see. Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. This can happen
that
in
makes sense.
Investment banking, in tech, and like all these other industries.
Got it.
But, you know, it's some sort of coordination and back channeling. So like maybe you talk to person A ahead of time, like, hey, when I bring this up, do I have your support? And if not, like, how can I, you know, curry favor or gain support ahead of time?
I actually remember watching House of Cards and Kevin Spacey's character or something. He would set up these scenarios where he'd do these like one-on-one conversations and strategize. And then when it comes to the actual vote or something, everything's staged.
You already know what's going to happen when it's the actual vote.
But I mean, in the show, something like the opposite happens. Because that person is back-channeled with someone else.
Or like people flip, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting though.
It's actually, those were the one-on-one conversations that we had in the classroom, outside of the classroom. So that when day of the vote came for the bill, you're like, hey, John, can I count on you for this? And, you know, 2 weeks ago, he said yes, but then now the day of the bill, like perhaps he's talked to Sally and Mary and things have come up. And that's where it gets heated because these are still our classmates.
Yeah.
So
what was your role?
I was a senator from Washington State.
Okay.
I was part of the Democratic Party.
Got it. Cool.
Oh, I was also chairwoman of the tech committee.
Very powerful. Hey guys, hope you're enjoying this juicy video. And I wanted to briefly interrupt in case you're interested in applying for MBA programs and one of the obstacles in your way is the GMAT, because I wanted to tell you guys about today's sponsor, Target Test Prep, which I credit a lot for helping me get a 750 on the GMAT. Target Test Prep has been helping students crush the GMAT for 16 years and covers quant, verbal, and data insights for the new GMAT focus, with 52 rigorous chapters broken into over 1,500 lessons, over 4,000 realistic GMAT problems, over 1,300 instructor-led videos, 1,200 digital flashcards for studying on the go, and live online support from GMAT focus experts. Target Test Prep is also the only company on GMAT Club with a perfect 5-star rating, and they also have the highest score improvement guarantee of 130 points. You're able to personalize your study plan based on your strengths and weaknesses. And so if you're interested in TTP, use my code RARELIQUID15 to get 15% off. And I'll leave information for all of this in this video's description. All right. Question three is, were there any kind of dramatic incidents during international trips? So I'll start with this one. So again, I do want to preface by saying I wasn't there, but this is what I heard. A group of girls go to some foreign country. I don't remember which one, but probably in Europe or something like that. And then one of the girls gets extremely drunk. Uh-oh. And so she is just plastered. The girls send her home, or like go home with her. And then they just like plop her onto a bed, like their Airbnb. When that girl wakes up, she has blacked out. So she isn't aware of like where everyone is and thinks that everyone ditched her.
Mm.
So she, from what I've heard, just goes apeshit and then gets super pissed, like texts them like, I can't believe that you ditched me, blah, blah, blah. Gets people's luggages and stuff and starts like throwing stuff. And then leaves the Airbnb, something like that.
Like she like trashes the place. And
Yeah. But the thing is, like, the friends were just doing a good thing. She was super drunk and they just like left her there.
Sounds like she was still super drunk.
Maybe it's possible. But that's probably the, during my 2 years, one of the crazier stories I've heard.
Yeah. That's a tough one. That's really tough. I would say, like, I really enjoyed the trips that I've been on. International trips are hard. You really get to know someone.
True.
When you travel with them, especially to a new place. And the positive side is that like, oh my gosh, we can form all these like beautiful new memories together in a new place, new experiences. But then on the negative side, and you know, if you've traveled in a big group before, you know this is true. People have very different preferences on what they do, how they spend their free time, how much money they're willing to spend, how to split things, where to go, what time to wake up, do we go out, do we stay in? Like all of these preferences, like, and that's magnificent.
Especially with a huge group of people.
Yeah.
Business school trips like roll deep.
It can range from like,
yeah, it can range too.
From like 8 people to like 400 people. Mm. And obviously things are, considerations are different when it's a giant trip. But yeah, so like with all these different preferences and honestly, big personalities.
Oh yeah, like true.
Business school students are opinionated.
Yeah.
And you know, that's how we've gotten to this point in our life, is like having opinions. And you know, a lot of business school students are very type A, mm-hmm. you know, in the workplace and in their lives. They're used to taking charge and taking the lead of things. And so what happens when you put, you know, 8 of those very strong-willed people together when you're organizing a trip? You have to figure out if it works together. And there are times that it doesn't, and drama, whether drunken or not, like, you know, happens. And then, you know, reputation kind of takes a hit as well.
Yeah. I will say I do feel fortunate, because all of the international trips I've went on, there hasn't been much drama. There has definitely been these interactions where people want to do something or not, and like, or people are being more alpha. Like there's one, this one guy when I was in my Kenya trip,
Kenya?
Yeah.
I'm so jealous.
This one guy was just asking like way too many questions, and literally—
To whom?
Because it was kind of not just like a for fun trip. It was also like you meet leaders and blah, blah, blah. And he would just ask so many questions that we started like tallying them.
Oh my God.
I think he would literally ask a question, I don't know, like whenever, it's really hard to put a number, but I'd say in a day, he probably asked like at least 30 questions.
Just like an obscene number of questions. That's like not the vibe.
Yeah.
It's also reading the room. So I think Ben brings up a really good point. There's like different types of trips that you go on. One that's just for leisure and fun. And then there's more like professional trips that you go on where you can meet heads of state or like presidents and CEOs of companies, because it's a more like school organized professional trip. And it, you really have to read the room, because if you're asking 30 questions and if you're just trying to look smart in front of like a CEO of a company and the rest of your classmates are like, what's going on?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not a good vibe. Yeah. You know, you just seem annoying.
Yeah. I also, I remember this one, like, kind of related to that. I remember there was this one person during my trip. Actually, I shouldn't name where I went because then we could never know. People who watch this won't be able to narrow it down. But essentially, we did this one like hackathon for an hour where we talked to a company. And then it was literally we talked to them for an hour. We made a presentation for an hour. So two hours. So what can you really get done in 2 hours, right? Like not like that much, but we did a presentation. And at the very end, we did, we picked the winner based on audience clapping. And then this person, I was actually on that team and we quote unquote won, but it was like through audience clapping. And then it was not a really big deal. But that person posted on their LinkedIn, like announcing that they had won this like X country's hackathon, blah, 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 blah. And then
like embellished it.
Yeah. I mean, made it sound like it was a legit competition and things like that. I know this is like slightly a tangent, but because it's not purely related, it's just drama during trips, but people saw that during the trip and everyone's just like shaking their head.
Well, I also want to say if you're watching this and this sounds petty, like, you know, we're just like narrowing down on like, oh my God, I can't believe this person acted this way or did this way. Like, I think it's because like sometimes there's a lack of reading a room. And as you can see, it's left an impression on Ben and me, these different experiences, and on our other classmates where like someone behaves in a way that's like a little bit like distasteful.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we are like nitpicking for sure, but you know, it has reputational harm.
That's a great point.
Yeah. Other people see it as well. I don't think it's just us.
Right. All right. Next question is, what is the craziest kind of power move you've seen someone do or use in order to get ahead?
Yeah, I would say something that I've seen that is kind of interesting, but kind of weird, is really cozying up with school administration or, you know, kind of like sucking up to the deans. And I mean, I guess it makes sense for like what they want to get, whether it's like a position of some sort where you would need the dean's approval or you would need references from the deans. So I think that's a little bit odd, especially when it's at odds with how classmates perceive this person. It goes back to like how we referenced high school, where it's like if someone is reading the room and understands like their classmates, you kind of see someone like sucking up to the teacher. Like it doesn't feel good, especially if this person is not well liked within the class. And so it's just like a difference of how they behave towards their peers versus how they behave towards authority. And that's a little bit ick.
Did that person, out of curiosity, do well for themselves, like in terms of recruiting and all of that? Like I always think I've definitely experienced someone like that before. And honestly, they do pretty well recruiting wise. And so I'm just curious, like for this person, and I think in general, like sometimes the thing that kind of maybe I guess personally bothers me, but can't do anything about it. And honestly, at the end of the day, don't really care, is that people will do these kinds of things, get ahead and do well. But I always think like, okay, eventually karma will come back.
I'm a big believer of that
too. Treat you the way that you are acting or will come back and get you for the way you're acting. I agree.
I think this person is doing well for themselves, which is fine. But like, are they well liked within our class? And will people go out of their way to like help them and hang out with them and nurture their friendship?
Yeah.
Like, sure, you can, but like, sure, you can grow in your career faster, get promoted faster with this mindset, you know, taking it outside of the school context. But I also believe that like, karma is a thing, and just be a good and kind person, and just be real and authentic. So,
yeah. I guess for me, I don't have really like this crazy story because I didn't really come across something where people were using like a power move in some kind of way. But, and I say this as if I didn't like come up with this question, but the only thing that does come to mind was like one person who was trying to become a leader for this club. He or she wanted to really, sometimes you run in slates, so you run with like a few other people, and basically they did not get in this situation. Sorry, it wasn't actually slates, it was that person wanted to be president, co-president with another person, but then someone else got selected. So then that person messaged the current club presidents and said, like, you ruined this club. I can't believe that you didn't like select me and this other person.
That should go over really well.
Yeah. And then so, I mean, that wasn't even the craziest thing that that person did, but that just added more to why people didn't really like that person as much.
They need to take I'm just a bill, because that is not a good negotiation tactic or any tactic to curry favor.
Yeah. I mean, also at that point, decision was made, so you don't even have negotiating power.
Yeah.
But yeah.
They were just upset.
Right. Hey guys, if you're watching this video because you're interested in breaking into a top MBA program, then I recently announced Liquid MBA, which is my own how to get into MBA course. And in there, we go over exactly what you need to know and what admissions committees look for as you build out your MBA applications. We also have admitted essays from the top schools, so you can see what it really takes to write a killer essay. And lastly, a lot of really specific insights and information for each school, including essay advice, how to build out your entire application, cater them to each school. And so if you're interested, I'll leave a link to Liquid MBA in this video's description. All right, last question is a bit of a catch-all and it's pretty broad, but it's just, what is a very crazy or dramatic event that has happened during your MBA experience? And I'll start with this one. So I'm not going to give too many specific details, but there was a trip that was happening. And then one person was in charge of all the finances, like planning everything. And then as it turned out, they had overcharged their group of friends by a few thousand dollars.
Oh my God.
Not just like $50. No. In total. But there were only like four people.
Yeah.
Something like that. And the way that the people who were in the hotel found out is that the person was being a little bit shady on, you know, like, don't ask the front desk for receipts or anything like that, because that person had tried to charge them an additional $70 for something. And then everyone was like, I don't know if what is this, right? Basically,
yeah.
Maybe the hotel did something wrong. And then so they said that they're going to go to the hotel desk, but then the person in charge was like, oh no, don't do that. But they go anyway, they get the bill and they're like, what the heck? Like, we're getting charged way more than this. And even the hotel front desk was like, yeah, well, I guess you guys are getting scammed then. And so it became a huge thing. One of the people being scammed, let's say, or charged more, was a JD MBA, and was like, I'm going to take you to a small claims court if you don't give me back this money. She eventually got back her money, but I don't think the rest of the people did.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That is such a dumb way to ruin your reputation.
Yeah. And that person really paid the price. And
what was going through their mind?
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of other stuff, because like, I don't want to give too many details, but there was like that person's sibling involved, and that person's sibling was kind of doing a lot of like the planning too. And
what a mess.
It was a huge disaster.
That is such a dumb way to go out. Like, these are classmates that you'll, and friends potentially, that you'll know for the rest of your life and career. Like, what a weird, weird story to like then just get a couple thousand dollars.
Right.
Like,
not worth it.
It's not worth it. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you? Were there any crazy stories?
I think just a follow up to your story is that like, it's kind of hard because in business school, it's a very expensive experience overall. And I know you've talked about that and, you know, how to cover expenses. But like when money is involved, and you guys probably know this just like in your friendships, things can get weird. But then when the bills are so large on the order of like thousands of dollars, it gets much, much weirder. That story is
more
definitely
than just weird. It gets unethical.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's true. Like, yeah, scamming.
Right.
I would say, I mean, as you guys know, in business school, the students who go to these schools are quite competitive. And so I think most dramatic thing that I can think of is that we had a field day in our first year where each of the sections compete against one another in these different sports. So we have like basketball, volleyball, tug of war, and all these different events like you would imagine a field day to be like. And coming out of this field day, the number of people with injuries, like broken bones, torn MCL, ACLs, shoot. And some people had to like be in crutches for like months and then get surgery because of them going too hard. at one of these like sporting events, you know, and we're in our late 20s, we're in early 30s, things are not working the same way. Yeah. You got to stretch before and after. And so, yeah, like people got really like actually very injured. And I just thought that was just like, oh my God, everyone's competitive spirit is coming out. Mm. It was our first year, very early.
That's also scary too. Like seeing, I've only seen a person break their bone. I've seen it twice. And it's like not fun to watch.
Yeah. I was cheering on one of the last events was a relay race. And I was cheering my classmates on and we're at the finish line. And one of our classmates collapses like maybe 20 feet in front of the finish line because they were just going so hard.
Oh my God.
Yes. And some people just keep running past this person who collapsed.
That's like the opposite of like this video I've seen where the person's trying to finish like a triathlon and then like they can't, their limbs are giving up and then like someone comes and helps them.
Yes. Like
these GSP students are just like running past this guy.
Exactly. Yeah. I know exactly the video you're talking about where like, you know, a competitor is like helping you get across the finish line. Nope. People just ran past this classmate who collapsed. Wow. He like had like a muscle spasm or something, or they had like a muscle spasm or something. So then like they couldn't finish, but it was just like really close to the finish line. And that was just, you know, ultra competition.
Dang. I actually, as you were talking, remember this other crazy story that I just want to like add on and we'll finish off with this, I guess. But this was a few years before my time, but it was such a crazy story that it got passed down. But essentially short-ish version is that there was this student who said that they had cancer. And then they would use that as an excuse, I think, to kind of gain sympathy in a lot of ways for however they wanted. So maybe like being invited to things or whatever, just gain the sympathy of their classmates. And then all of us, like one day, I think that person was kind of missing. And so people were worried. They like called that person's parents and was like, oh, we know this person has cancer and blah, blah, blah. And then the parents are like, what the heck? No, they don't. So apparently like that whole thing was a lie.
What?
And this was before my time again, but still like that crazy, that story was so crazy because it like passed down every year.
Wow. Who does that?
Yeah, but I swear this is just like, we kind of like are talking about, or at least I am like very, 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 very one off. Like I do think the vast majority of my classmates
are just really great, nice people. Yes.
And I would hang out with like a bunch of them, like when they're visiting LA, like I hang out with them because, you know, they're great people, but
I have one more story.
Okay. Go ahead.
Now that we're talking about drama. Okay. So the way that housing works at the GSB is that in your first year, everyone has on-campus housing and that's provided for. In the second year, we live in these houses all around campus in Palo Alto and Menlo Park in what we call pass downs. Mm-hmm. And they're pass downs because you get the house or you start a new lease and it's passed down from one second year to rising second years. Mm-hmm. And another benefit is that it's basically like a furnished house already. Mm. So if you're in a house that's been in the pass down system for the last 5 years, you know, the couch has been there presumably for the last 5 years and there's furniture, there's dishes, there's a Peloton, whatever. But so the way that you pay for these houses is that, yes, you start a new lease with the homeowner, the landlord. But then in addition to that, you have to pay for all the stuff that's in the house already. That might include like monitors and desks and your bed and your furniture, everything. So there's something called a pass down fee. Mm-hmm. And the way that you recoup the fee is by then passing this house down to the one below you.
Got it.
But what happens when a homeowner or the landlord decides to take their house out of the pass down system? Mm-hmm. That is, you know, just Stanford students create this pass down system. It's not something that's like with the landlord, although the landlord knows that, like, you know, incoming students will take this house probably. They're familiar with it, but like they're under no obligation.
I'm sensing a lot of buildup. There's a lot of suspense to this story.
Oh yeah. Well then pass down fees can range from like 8,000 to over 20 grand.
Oh wow.
Because people like, you know, oh, I just want to get a Peloton, add it to the pass down fee. The people below us will take on this fee. And then, you know, pass it down to someone else after. So there's some pass down fees that are over 20 grand because someone decided to, like, you know, get a jacuzzi or something crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And then when the house can no longer be passed down, the people in the house are forced to sell the items for like, how much can you sell like a 10-year-old couch for? Mm-hmm. That's like disgusting. No one wants to buy it. And you like lose the money. Mm. And so the really shady part is when MBA 2s know that their house, they have information, privilege information, know that their house will not be passed down, but then they give it to rising MBA twos, even if they have that information. And I've heard stories of this happening. And it is just also, you know, there's like a conversation to be had. Like, you don't want to lose the money. Other people, you know, have committed to it already. Like, so there have been some MBA ones who
really get screwed.
Mm. People in my class have gotten screwed because people in the class above them knew that it was not going to be renewed and still gave them this house for the year, but the next year it would end.
Mm. And then the MBA ones are just stuck with the pass down fee.
They're stuck with the pass down fee or trying to like sell any and all the furniture to make up the pass down fee.
Yeah.
Does that happen at Wharton?
No, there is no pass down fee. Like, this is the first time I've heard of something like this.
Yeah.
There are apartment like hand downs kind of, but nothing like this.
Yes. It's a whole like topic of conversation. And then also, like, how do houses get passed down from MBA twos to MBA ones is like, do some of them run like a, not a raffle, what is it called? Like
lottery?
Yes. Do they run lotteries or is it nepotism where you're like, oh, like, you know, I have the best house. I also want to give it to so-and-so because like I know them. And so people do it in different ways, but yeah, it's definitely a dramatic situation all around.
Finances in general with MBA, because, you know, you're people come from all different backgrounds. You're spending so much money already. You're not working. It can get very, very
heated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But with that said, I mean, that wraps up this video. And again, I want to give a post-ending disclaimer that we really enjoyed our MBA experiences, even despite what we talked about. I mean, I have a lot of videos where I talk about the great stuff about MBA, and Sheree has a lot of content that's really fun on like her Reels and TikTok that kind of showcase a lot of her experiences as she went to GSB.
It's actually quite interesting because I feel like there haven't been many avenues for me to talk about some of the cons. Mm-hmm. And it's not the cons with the school. It's like a lot to do with like the culture and the people. Like, I don't, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, as a human being, if you're in any type of organization or institution, like if even if you're at work or if you're volunteering somewhere, there's going to be cons to every kind of situation. And we just happen to talk about it in this video, basically.
And despite everything we've talked about, I would do it all over again. In fact, I would love to be back in school.
Okay. I don't want to be back in school now because I'm enjoying post-MBA life, but I can see where that sentiment comes from.
I saw someone in the class below me post on their Instagram story of them taking one of the classes I had taken and, you know, of the professor. It was just something I loved. And I was just like, oh, I had a feeling. I was like, oh my God, I would love to be back in spring semester of MBA 2 year.
Yeah. I mean, I see some stories because I know some of the younger class, like the one after me. And then they're like going to all the big popular events from school that are really big. But I'm like, I don't want to go to that anymore because personally, I'm like, you know, I've done that twice pretty much. You know, everything in MBA happens twice because you do it your first year and then your second year. Not the classes, but like the big events.
Prom
and stuff.
And then like get-togethers.
So I think more so I do really miss my friends. Aww. Like I miss just being close, super, super close to like 100 people I can just hit up anytime or get to know better. That I definitely miss. And LA is so sparse.
I miss the classes. Yeah. I miss the professors.
Well, you might have just had better classes than me. But yeah, anyway,
so alrighty.
That concludes this video. But in the future, we're going to actually introduce Sheree's sister, Jean, who went to HBS. So then in one of our future videos, we're going to have an episode or video where we have Harvard, Stanford, Wharton. And we haven't decided the topic yet, but maybe about like career advice or could be some of the stuff we've already touched upon. So stay tuned for that.
And let us know what questions you have in the comments.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thank you.